Journalist and author William Longavisha was asleep at home in Northern California on the morning of September 11, 2001.
My wife woke me up, actually, and said, "They're bombing New York." I said, "Who is?" She said, "I don't know." I said, "Is it nuclear?" She said she didn't know. Very quickly, of course, I was tuned in.
At the time, Longavisha was working for the Atlantic Monthly. He decided he needed to get to New York as soon as possible, and he made it there 3 days later. When he arrived, he got in touch with the head of an obscure city agency. It's called the Department of Design and Construction, and it happened that that agency was put in charge of the recovery effort at Ground Zero. The head of DDC, as it's known, was a man named Kenneth Holden.
It just so happened that he was a reader of mine, and after I contacted him, he brought me in. Once I was in, I stayed in and was there for about, I think, about 5 months, pretty much full time, 7 days a week. There were a couple of occasions when I left to pursue certain angles for a couple of days, but pretty much I was there the whole time.
William Longavisha wrote about those 5 months of unrivaled access to Ground Zero for the Atlantic in a three-part series called American Ground, Unbuilding the World Trade Center. It was the longest piece of original reporting ever printed by the magazine. It was later published as a book, and in it, William Longavisha describes how the people who ran that small city agency, the DDC, became Ground Zero's most improbable leaders.
It turned out that they were the really effective responders, and the reason was they had connections to the guys with the heavy equipment, and the weight of the steel, the weight of the ruins, required heavy equipment at first, again, to try to find people who were alive. There was no hierarchy. They weren't in charge, not for a long time. But they were very effective responders. And what it was that there was total chaos in the beginning. And the chaos was allowed, for various reasons, to continue and to sort itself out without the intervention of plans, without the intervention of FEMA and various bureaucracies. And that self-sorting process was only possible because of the perimeter wall that was set up around it. It was allowed to be itself in that secret inner world. I did not expect it, but what I saw there was a beautiful expression of the old American idea of courage, creativity, lack of hierarchy, a meritocracy in the biggest way.
In your reporting, you wrote about a lot of things that people didn't want to hear at the time. Looting by firefighters, these territorial disputes between the police and the firefighters, and access to the site, and all of these emotional dynamics at work. Some people who really weren't heroes. Was that difficult for you to do?
No. My job is to speak and to observe and then to speak or to write honestly. When I wrote about certain aspects of the otherwise wonderful thing that was happening there, I tried to write about it from a real point of view, meaning I was not at all disapproving. In fact, I tried to make it clear that I wasn't judging, and I still don't judge that act. This was a battlefield, and looting goes on every battlefield. The rules didn't apply, and the fact that they didn't apply was one of the wonderful things about what happened there. Invention, creation, courage.
This might be an odd question, or maybe not, but I mean, you were there for 5 months, and you were in this environment breathing in a lot of the things around you. And we've heard, of course, from some rescue workers who have had health problems. Did you have any, have there been any effects of that? Have you experienced any of that?
No, I haven't. Maybe I will in the future. I kind of doubt it. You know, we all had respirators from the very beginning. This was America. I mean, the supplies poured in abundance. They had to set up a trucking operation to get the stuff out. It was coming in so much. But people didn't use the respirators for a long time, except on some occasions, the most extreme smoke and dust underground. But pretty much, people had the respirators. They were slung around their necks, and they didn't put them on, and I didn't either. And the reason was, it was sort of necessary in a weird way. It wasn't self-sacrificial, but there had to be this kind of reckless courage, even if it was nonsensical. That was part of the beauty.
There are things that you saw, of course, many things that you saw that you didn't write about.
Well, there were many things that were, it was such a sprawling story, first of all, that one has to choose. The one thing I didn't write about, and I never do write about, was the grief occasionally of the family members who had lost people that I saw, and in fact that I was very close to, because in some cases I took these family members around to show them what was going on in terms of the physical work being done. And, you know, deep, deep grief, the kind of grief that is not only strong but everlasting. I did not write about that because I think that's a private matter, and it would have been a violation of these people to write about their grief.
Shortly after these articles were published as a book, you were asked about your thoughts on a memorial, and you, I think you said that you didn't feel like there needed to be one, and actually warned against, almost warned against wallowing, as you said, in the events of 9/11. And yet here, of course, we are 10 years on, and we are commemorating it with memorials and such. Do you feel like it's appropriate?
Well, I was never against memorials. I mean, if people want to have a memorial, I mean, it's fine. I mean, maybe it's helpful to some people. That was never an issue for me. It is more the wallowing in grief that was and is an issue for me. I believe that grief needs to be private. And that doesn't mean that help can't be given to those who are grieving. It should be given. But you don't make a spectacle out of it. You don't stand up as a politician and wallow in it. And as the media, you don't wallow in it or shouldn't. It's not to deny the tragedy. It's to question the utility of public grief.
You often hear people say, 9/11 changed America forever. Do you think that's true?
Forever is a big word. 9/11 certainly did change America, and I was not aware enough of it when I was there because I was so, you know, wrapped up in the day-to-day. And looking, by the way, it's like a blossoming of something very beautiful. But the larger currents have been hugely self-destructive. One war fought in the wrong way, one war that should never have been, other wars probably coming as a result, the construction of huge and expensive security bureaucracies, problems with legal conduct both in war and at home, then with the current president coming in, finding really the same policies being pursued, it seems to indicate that these self-destructive impulses are not a question of the left or the right or who's in charge, but something very worrisome about the United States as a whole, who we are, what we are doing to ourselves, and what we continue to do to ourselves. But as far as the U.S. being changed forever, I don't know.
That's William Langevica. His account of the Ground Zero recovery effort is called American Ground, Unbuilding the World Trade Center. He spoke to me from Paris. William, thank you.
Thank you.